I'm Richard Porter.
I'm Johnny Smith.
And this is Smith & Sniff, a podcast in which two friends talk about cars. And this week, Noel Gallagher's high idling Jaguar.
I was coming back late last night from a job. And you know when you start to get creative with your driving. And there was also some... I'm just going to leave that there.
What are you doing tomorrow? Oh, I'm on my creative driving course.
Course, yeah, exactly. That was good. I enjoy it. I was just doing a bit. And also the music was really good. There was some good music on the radio, so it was getting me a bit sort of heated up. I was getting a bit bouncy.
But this reminds me of, I think I might have told you this before, about a guy I used to work with who was famously a bit of an erratic / terrifying driver. And we had a new member of our team who got a lift from this guy. And when she got back to the office, she went, "How was it being a passenger in the car? Were you okay? Did he drive all right?" And she went, she's a very polite young woman, and she went, He was driving in quite an exotic manner.
Exotic?
Exotic. Oh, and I've never forgotten that. Brilliant. To describe basically someone who's an absolute wingnut behind the wheel, just going, "Oh, he's driving quite exotically again." But I like your creative driving as well. I think that's...
Creative driving. Well, I've had
so
a few
how
job-
did how did your creative driving manifest itself last night?
Oh, it was great. I was driving a Porsche Cayman GT4.
Yes,
and I'm not going to tell you all about that because that's for a video on my channel. But what I would say, it's obviously in that Porsche way a very satisfying mechanical experience. But I had to take it back and drop it off at Porsche GB with a very sad emoji face, and then pick up my Zoe, which felt like I was driving on top of a... It's a great car in its own right, but it did feel like I was driving on top of a porter cabin all the way home rather than in a porter cabin. But I was doing the whole like regen braking, not using the actual brake pedal, to try and immaculately time coming up to a roundabout after a spirited... dual carriageway section. So, yeah. And it doesn't have one pedal braking. There is a bit of regen, but it's light. So you have to... I'm trying to time how long before the car will roll to a stop or a near stop without touching the brakes.
Oh.
And it takes a bit of skill, Richard, I'm not going to lie. It takes
so
a
that's
bit of skill.
Pure just letting the momentum ebb away.
It's coast timing, I would call it. Yeah, because you have to know how far to kind of coast.
Yeah,
and you have to really analyse the distance. It's probably more fun than it is for me to describe it to listeners. Anyway, that in combination with a little bit of 90s dance, it was going down all right.
Oh. And
yeah, of course. And I was just saying to you before we started recording, am I the only one that looks at the traffic lights on the 90 degree to your right at a roundabout to see whether that goes to amber for whether I need to get ready to go on the clutch or on the throttle? You went, yeah, of course I do that. So
well,
do we
I just
do
can't
that?
Believe that everyone doesn't, but I know, I'm pretty certain they don't. I think the inattentive driver doesn't, but the keen tillerman or woman will obviously do that every time, because they put those sort of tubes over the lights, don't they? Or sometimes like a half tube to try and conceal them. The half tube is crafty because they've realized the full tube, you can see the light reflecting off the inside of the tube, so you're still getting a little tip off from the old
damn
amber.
It you do know yeah you do.
But they put a half tube on now to avoid the reflections, which is really, I think, spoils.
What about
sports.
The 80s? What about the louvers, the slats?
Yes, the rear window of a Capri.
Yeah, like the rear window. I was going to say
accessorised Capri window in 1984.
Yeah, and I quite like the louver thing. I'm quite down with that. But of course, you can see the reflections from the inside of the louver. Is the reflection
now?
Red?
I wonder, is the louver not commonly seen sort of when the traffic lights in urban areas, they're near a building? Is it sort of to
stop the glare?
Yeah, so that if you've got a bedroom right by some traffic lights, you don't feel like you're in a very slow motion 70s disco.
I can imagine it being really annoying.
Oh, it'd be awful,
wouldn't it?
It's like
I used to have a street light outside my bedroom window, a house I used to rent.
Yeah.
And it was one of those yellowy, what is that, a sodium bulb? I'm trying to remember what
bulb that was. Yeah, I guess so, isn't it? I think so.
It's like an old diesel engine. It takes about 20 minutes to get up to working temperature, and then it sits there, bright as can be. And it's like, come on, I'm at working temperature now.
Mind you, we've got some of those energy-saving bulbs in our house, and I swear to God, the one in our bedroom, it's in the top light, so of course we don't really use it that much, thank God. But I swear, when you first turn it on, it actually sucks existing light out of the room. It's the most ineffectual light you've ever seen. And then after about 5 minutes, bing, it's all, yay, look, I can light things. And you just go, yeah, take your time, mate. But
bloody hell. Like old school TVs with valves.
Yeah.
Because we bought a second-hand TV when I was a kid that was bigger than our old TV, but it was an older television, so we saw it was kind of taketh with one hand and giveth with the other.
Yeah.
And I remember it was wood veneer sided, and it was a General Electric TV, GEC.
Was it?
Yeah, and it had fantastic push buttons. You push one in and it pops the other one out, and it was old. I remember it was old when we got it, but because it was bigger, it felt special. And to this day, I can remember if you were going to watch a special program, like let's say the A-Team, because I remember that was a good moment, you'd have to put the telly on maybe 5 minutes early to let it kind of come on song, because it would do a bit of flickering, yeah, honestly, you had to sort of put the TV on choke, run out of the room, go and do whatever your mum had asked you to do. Like, you've got to do that, make sure you've set the table, make sure you've done that, okay, I'm going to do that, my trainers are not by the door, they're where they should be, and then you'd know that all the picture and everything was dead clear in order to fully appreciate the cinematic beauty of George Peppard and, I don't know, Willis Jeeps that just seem to spookily do huge barrel rolls when they touch like a fern.
And then the occupants would get out going, ah.
Yeah, really sooty faced.
Yeah. General Electric's a funny company though, isn't it? Because they make so much stuff. If you went on Dragon's Den and went, yeah, I've got this idea for a company and we're going to make televisions and microwaves for Americans and jet engines and really big trains for Americans. They just go,
you're spreading yourself a bit thin.
Yeah. Look, here's where I'm at. Your business model is too diffuse. Now get out.
It's true, isn't it?
There's no synergies there. There's no. You know what? I think we could use the same parts in some of our microwaves as we do in our massive jet engines, don't you think? No.
But I suppose that's what happens when a company starts a very long time ago and just gradually diversifies left, diversifies right.
I'd imagine they bought people, didn't they? They must have bought other people, maybe, and that's how it's sort of got to this weird position. I don't know.
Of course, they bought people. I tell you what, when I was driving back last night, the one thing that really made me giggle was I went past on the motorway, you know, when you overtake slowly because you're probably on cruise control and you're only doing 4 miles an hour more than the other guy.
Oh, yes. So I find that annoying. I'll often give it a tickle just to get past and then resume.
Yes. So I was doing that because I was just tired. I was just cruising. And I went past a Fiat 500, a white one, modern one, obviously. And I don't know why it made me laugh so much, but it's that assumption of, oh, I bet that's being driven by a female, probably under 35. Let's just see. Well, how wrong I was. For a start, the whole car was full of skin. Like there was a shoulder right up against the door glass on the driver's side, and there was a guy in it who it just looked comedic, like. He had the car built around him. There's no way he would have got in through the door.
Now, just close your eyes. We're going to weld the sides on.
Exactly. But I was going to say, like, put a space blanket on. We're just going to spot weld the roof. Okay, ready? Go. 3, 2, 1.
Now, if it's to getting too hot, just tell us that we'll stop the robot for a minute.
Exactly. Here's a really cold can of lilt. Just dab it over your face.
Any of the sparks on your clothes, just quickly press the lilt against it.
This guy, honestly, this guy was massive. He just looked like a 70s wrestler. And I couldn't stop giggling because he was driving, you know, with that sort of hunch over the wheel that you get.
Yeah.
And clearly, I just can't believe it was his car. And I'm not being sort of car sexist here, because I'm currently driving a Zoe every day, and that's what I was in. And I get lots of people saying to me, I believe they're really good cars. They're just women's cars, though, aren't they? And I'm like, nah, it's just not fair. Just because it's got a lady name. But... Yeah. And also, how many drift guys go, yeah, I drive a Sylvia, that's the name of an old lady who has a hostess trolley full of scones, isn't it?
Yes.
But I mean, that's the stereotype, right? I mean, how many young Sylvias do you know? But yeah,
that's so true. That is one of those names that just sort of stopped being given to babies in about, what, 1970?
Oh, a Sylvia is a staunch care home name these days, I would have thought, isn't it? There's probably a lot of Sylvias.
Yeah, my mum had a friend called Sylvia, and she was, well, I mean, she'd be in her 70s now, so there we are.
I bet she used to wear those really shiny jumpers. You know, the ones with the sort of silver fleck weave in them?
Oh, no, this Sylvia was a farmer's wife. She was very sort of, practical.
Oh, okay.
Practical clothing, because, you know, she'd have to do stuff on the farm.
Okay, barber jacket with a bit of poo stain on one of the pockets. Well, not a human one, a horse one, or a cow one.
Yeah, probably off-brand wax jackets.
Oh, off-brand?
I think so, because it's not... If you're an actual farmer and you're not sort of, you know, one of those farmers who just tells other people what to do, you don't go barber, do you? You're just paying for the label. You go functional. You go down to one of those farm supply shops and you just get whatever they've got.
So no name wax jacket?
I think so, yeah.
Okay. Just go down to your Mole Valley.
Bear in mind, this was in the 80s as well that I'm sort of talking about. I mean, you know, and into the 90s as well, perhaps.
And just ever so slightly into the 90s. Mm-hmm. Keeping
taking you through the night with hits from the 80s and slightly in the 90s as well, just a little bit.
I had that. I had a mate's birthday party a few weeks ago, and her husband, who's one of my best friends, said, I've got a Spotify playlist. I'm having a silent disco. He said, I'm doing a Spotify playlist for silent disco. There's three channels, so I'm going to do 90s, 2000 to the present day, and then pre-90s, basically, because 90s being, I guess, the heyday of when all of us were students
in your teens or whatever,
and he just wanted a load of Britpop, I think, on a playlist. So that's fine, but then I kept getting wrong-footed by things. He said, "Here's the details for the Spotify list," because he knows I'm a bit of a musical nerd, and he went, "You dive in and add some stuff if you want." And I kept thinking of stuff and then going, "Oh, that'll be great on the '90s playlist." And then, "Oh, it came out in 1989," and there's a lot of those sort of cusp of decade songs that you think, "Oh, that's classic '90s," and you realise that it's not, or things that are more recent or older than I thought. I used to be quite good at identifying the year songs came out, and I feel like now I'm just it's not even 1 year out, it's more like I've just keep getting things 2 or 3 years out.
Oh gosh, Rich, it's the beginning of the end,
isn't it? I know.
Yeah,
I won't be able to tell you when the Austin Maestro came out next.
Oh, that's awful, isn't it?
It was 1983.
Okay,
Ken,
thanks for I was going to say
listen guys, look.
Guys, welcome to show. This week has been Children in Need Week that we're recording this. And I do think Ken Bruce needs to just give us a shout and say, look, for Children in Need, let's do Shotmaster.
Yeah.
I'm going to do it.
Come on, Ken. Get absolutely wankered on air for the children. Yeah. Come on. It's for the kids, Ken. Don't be selfish.
It's for the kids. Everyone's got to open the cupboard, find that holiday booze that you referenced a long while ago. Oh, I bought a bottle of this.
What are you having next? Well, Ken, it's sort of yellow shit that I bought when I was on holiday in Greece.
Corfu.
17 years ago. Oh, dear. That sounds a little powerful. Oh, down the hatch you go.
Is there any sediment at the bottom? Yes, Ken. About 2 centimetres. Yeah. Right. Yeah. Give it a quick shake and then
it's
let's
go. It's gone really milky now, Ken, but I'm going to give it a go. Oh, that's the spirit. Quite literally.
Yeah.
Well, for people who don't know what we're talking about, we once had a chat about Ken Bruce's Potmaster spin-off, Shotmaster, which is a radio drinking game, which is one of our videos, so it's on YouTube.
Oh, gosh, it's that old, isn't it?
See us, yeah. I think, was it when we were driving the Suzuki Jimny, I think? It was one of the...
Was it a
videos where we're in that? Yeah, I think.
And if anyone from BBC Radio is listening, just come on, take that idea and run with it. Don't be foolish. Yeah. Obviously, it's not. You're not going to do it in a car. It's a daft idea.
No.
Simply at a desk with a collection of exotic booze, usually in a bottle, because you know, exotic booze that's not necessarily nice booze is always in an interestingly shaped bottle. So it's like they spend money on the glass, not necessarily the contents.
Yeah, it's got a depiction of a shirtless man on a horse in quite detailed relief on the bottle.
It must be
really expensive to do. But actually, it turns out like it's plum gin or something.
It's in a bamboo basket that looks a little bit like a cricket box if you took it off. So you could go to a fancy dress party looking like a native, in inverted commas, wearing... Or the idea is you drink an entire bottle of this stuff and then wear said bamboo basket.
And then dress like the person on the label, yeah.
Yes. Oh, what a great idea.
That's a good party. Hang on, twist on the fancy dress theme. Bring some weird booze that you bought on holiday, but you have to be dressed as the label.
That's a brilliant idea. I mean, I suppose the obvious one is Captain Morgan.
Yeah, you just have a party full of Captain Morgans and the, what's his face, Johnny Walker, probably.
Oh, Johnny Walker, just not a bloke DJ. In a real hurry.
No, a bloke in double denim. I was going to say, someone said to me the other day that we should do Shotmaster at one of the Late Break live shows. Oh, and I was a bit like, well, yes, but is it sort of...
Gosh.
Is there a potential clash with the idea that it's basically a car show at which we're then going to drink heavily on stage?
We'd have to organise a bus, a coach to take us all away to a Holiday Inn or whatever.
Yeah.
Wouldn't we? And drop everyone off so everyone has to stay at the same two or three B&Bs.
Oh, God.
It has to be a Plaxton Paramount or one of those.
What about a Van Hool? We're doing a Van Hool.
Oh, it's a Van Hool. Yeah, it's a Van Hool. Yeah, I'd love it. I haven't been on a coach for ages.
What about... Well, I tell you what, why don't you recreate the feeling of being on a coach by buying a load of fruit and then leaving it in a hot bag for 3 weeks and then, like, buy a radiator, something like that, a hot rucksack, and then just open the rucksack and have a good smell, because that's what coaches smell like. Hot, rotting fruit.
Hot, rotting fruit. And I'm going to wear some man-made fibres, just before I put that on, just after I put that on, I'm going to go for quite a long run, and then I'm going to mask it quickly, because it's one of those ones where you do exercise and you realise you haven't put deodorant on, so you put it on after to do the sort of back masking. But I'd use something like Lynx. I don't think they do Lynx Oriental anymore. I think they
probably...
I don't think Oriental is...
I don't actually
available.
Remember that anyway. Was it
I went through a phase of enjoying Lynx Oriental deodorising spray. I think it was purple accents on a black can, but I can't remember.
Yeah.
But needless to say, yeah, that's what I would do. And then you'd come off the bus, obviously stinking of either gone off fruit or a sort of 90s deodorant. And then get drinking. Basically, unless you've started on the bus already with a carrier bag.
Oh, I think you've probably started on the bus already, haven't you?
Yeah. I've got a Mitsubishi hip flask in the cupboard. I'd probably crack on with that.
Well, yes, I suppose that would be... I mean, really, you want a bag of cans, though, don't you?
Bag-o-cans. They're always warm whenever you buy them. I don't like warm lager. Warm cider I can handle.
No, you get it from the fridge in the shop, surely.
Yeah, I've always had disappointment with that. It's never as cold as you were expecting, and then I'm reluctant to commit.
No, well, because they often have those sort of open-fronted...
Which is just... I mean, whose idea is that? To put loads of things in a fridge, but not put a door on it, and then go, oh, I wonder where my electricity's going.
Yeah.
It's just like, well, don't be a complete flesh wallet. It's pretty obvious, isn't it? It's like opening the front door of your house, leaving the heating on, and then going, I just can't believe it's still chilly.
It just won't warm up. It's weird. It's so weird.
Yeah. Supermarkets are just so dim.
Actually, that's one of those things. One of those things that bugs me a lot is when you go into a supermarket that has the sliding or hinged doors on the fridges or freezers, and someone's left them open.
Yeah, that is annoying.
It really pisses me off.
Somebody hasn't adjusted the self-close mechanism, if there is one.
Yeah,
I do like the sliders, which is sort of
slovenliness sometimes. But yeah,
well, people are, as you know, people can be flutes, can't they?
Yes.
Oh. I know what I was going to ask you. It wasn't about that bloke in the Fiat 500 that made me instantly think of real life Mario Kart, where it was somebody mentioned on social media actually, and I thought this is good as a potential topic for us to talk about, and I'll bring it up now. Really, really good. It's if you could get a time machine, what era would you go back to so you could go into a car dealership and strike a deal buying a vehicle? And I thought, that's a good one. Hell. Yeah, I know. It's a rich.
Just one. Just got to buy one.
Yeah, or maybe I might let you have two for the purposes of the podcast. So, you know, let's say one's across the road from the other one. It's actually Ant Brownies. What period would you set your time machine for and what dealership would you visit? For example, Johnny could head to a Roots dealer and haggle on an Avenger Tiger and an Imp to squirrel away somewhere. And I thought, bloody hell, I think he's hit the nail on the head there, Ant. That's quite a strong...
Have we had anything? We've got sort of infinite budget.
Or infinite budget... But it has to be something that appeals to you. Don't just go for resale.
There's a temptation to go back to 1985 and go to a Ferrari dealer and say, I'd like a 288 GTO, please. But I think even then they'd have gone, what other Ferraris have you bought from us? And I'd have to say, I haven't. I've just arrived in a time machine. And I'm afraid I haven't had time. Do you want me to pop back another five years and buy a 308 from you? And then I'll keep jumping forward a year until I've got a collection of other Ferraris.
No, hang on, because they obviously wouldn't believe you about the time machine. So you'd have to say, look, I'm a very famous street magician. I'm going to reach into my pocket and I've got this. I've got a television that phones people in my pocket and you bring out your smartphone. Everyone would just go, what the shit's going on here? This is spooky. And go, right, now that you've seen my pocket television phone that does everything better than you've ever seen, put me down for a 288 GTO, all right? Or I'm going to start having loud words with people in the street outside your dealership.
Trouble is, they'd say this television phone has limited functionality, and you go, yeah, because there's no mobile phone masts and you haven't got Wi-Fi. We haven't got what? Never mind, just do the audio.
Well, just make sure you've got lots of stuff saved on there so you can flick through and go, look, I can watch TV. Look, there's a music video. Look at this. Look at that.
I'm going to play you this bit of music and they'd be going, I don't, what? Who? We've never even heard of half these bands. No, they don't exist yet. That's the old thing. What about if you did go back, you got distracted and you forgot to buy a car, but you were just back in 1985 and you did things that made you incredibly famous, and then you got in a time machine, came back to the present day, forgot what you'd done, and then you just kept getting bothered in the streets because, hey, it's that guy from the 80s. And we're like, what? When? Well, I don't remember any of this. He hasn't aged a bit. Well, no, because it was a time machine.
And it's like first world time machine problems, a situation that's never going to arise.
Isn't that that's one of the simplest ways to demonstrate that there will never be time machines, is that we aren't ever being visited by people from the future?
No. I think you're absolutely right there. So I was thinking of this question. He did actually also mention something like, imagine going into a Lotus dealership or a Vauxhall dealership just at a time when the Lotus Carlton has come off sale and sales aren't particularly good. So there's one sitting there and it hasn't flown out the door and they're getting a bit touchy about it, going like, oh shit, we're going to have to get rid of this thing. And you can go in and strike a keen deal. And it's in a sort of ex-demonstrator. And I thought, oh, because I have thought about Lotus Carltons recently a lot.
Yeah.
I've got a real thing for them. I do want one on that side of things.
Yeah, I mean, it's so tempting, isn't it? Because now you've said that, I'm thinking, God, imagine it's 1987 and various manufacturers are going, oh, shit, Group B rallying's been cancelled and we've got all these bloody homologation cars to get rid of still. Except Lancia, who didn't bother building theirs in the first place, but as far as I can work out. I could never find out how many Delta S4 Stradalis were actually made, but I sort of have this feeling it was about four or something.
Yeah, I was going to say, I think it was four.
I think it was such a con job. But Audi built 200 Sport Quattros, although I think those did all sell because I guess they were sort of the least weird and probably the most civilised and were just a sort of amped up but shortened Quattro, because I seem to remember they sold pretty quickly. And the last batch made all came to the UK. The last Sport Quattros made were UK cars, because there was such demand for them here. So I don't think you get a Sport Quattro cheap in sort of 1986-87, but they couldn't shift RS200s or 6R4s, no. I know that. Not sure about T16s. I'd love a T16.
T16 would be a special thing, wouldn't it?
Yeah. Oof.
I know it's one of those pondering. It's a good pub chat, actually.
It is a good pub chat.
With people.
I told you about when I met a billionaire. Weirdly, I met this guy. He was a very covert billionaire, but he's massively wealthy, as it turned out, who was involved in F1. But he's a total car nerd. He would be like our age, which is even more depressing that he's got more money than astronauts. But he said, we started talking about what cars he'd got in his collection. And he said, I've got a real thing about 205 GTIs. And I went, oh, have you got one? And he went, I've got more than one, actually. So I said, you've got a 1.6 then? He went, yeah, and a 1.9. And I went, don't tell me you've got a T16 as well. And he just went, yes, I do have a T16 as well. I was like, you bastard. Then he went, but I don't have a CTI. And it clearly really bothered him that he hadn't got a CTI in his collection. And I was like, you don't need one. He went, yeah, but just for completeness, it really bothers me that I don't have one. And then we were talking about various sort of less desirable derivatives of cool cars and how much he would want one in his collection. Proper car nerd. I was really impressed, actually. It just goes to show you can have all the money in the world, but you can still be kind of down and dirty with the grim details of going, do you remember the Fiat Tipo with the digital dash kind of nonsense?
It's not about the money, is it? And also, rarity doesn't have to be expensive. The perception of exotica. I was listening to Brian Cox, the Astro guy.
Yes.
Doing some sort of advert for his new show on the radio. Yeah. And I thought, quite like Brian Cox's voice to narrate the scene of like one of these TV shows where you no prep drag racing shows where they find in inverted commas an abandoned road in the middle of nowhere. What? to just turn up and pull the car off the trailer, and you're not allowed to do any prep. You just got to stage up, check the car, and race. And usually one of them ends up crashing.
Hang on, are these real shows?
Yeah, they are. Yeah, yeah.
In America.
Yeah.
Okay.
What's it called? Drag Outlaws or something? I went through a phase of watching it quite regularly.
Oh, right. This is a new one. I didn't know this. Yeah, okay.
But the idea with no prep drag racing is obviously you don't know the surface of the road that you're going to race on, and you haven't got time to do shakedowns.
Mm.
So you just have to go with your gut.
It just feels they're just trying to synthesize dangerousness. I mean, you do this?
Well, I guess it's for weird bravado. Yeah. In fact, I think Formula One should do a bit of no prep racing. I think it would be amazing.
Or rallying. No, you're not allowed pace notes. You've got no idea where the road's going at all. And sometimes might just stop, but that's, or we've painted a tunnel on a wall like Wile E. Coyote. That's the challenge.
I think you've just got to pick a co-driver with incredible vision, and they've got to look really far down the road and then describe it quickly. So, like an art critic that describes a painting very, very, very detailed. You have to be like that, but at hyper speed.
Or you are allowed pace notes, but your co-driver is someone who's not very fast talking. He's got quite a languid delivery. I don't know, like Gary Barlow or someone. He's just sort of...
Gary Barlow pace notes.
Yeah. Well, he's just going, I think there's a corner coming up here around... Oh, it was that one we just went round there. Now, when I wrote a million... there's a bridge here I forgot to mention. And he's just gently chatting his way around without really giving you any useful information whatsoever.
I think that could work. You were just about to say a million love songs, weren't you? I was always convinced that the lyrics were a million love songs would be mega. That's what I always thought. Million love songs would be mega.
Do you know the one that bothers me lyrically? I know it's a pedantic point. Is the taxi cab is waiting, and you just go taxi cab. Who says taxi cab? Well, mini cab would have fitted, but I suppose it's not very glamorous, is it? The mini cab is waiting.
Well, that's because it would already be beeping outside, and they're like, "Dude, we've got to finish the song." And he's like, "Listen, I've got another booking, and the Charan is a 2.3, so it's actually very thirsty, and I don't want to shut it off because I've got the heating on 27 degrees.
It's a 2.3 auto, mate. I mean." Honestly, I'm barely turning a profit on this racket as it is, and now you're tinkling away on your piano.
And he'd be like, right, that's it. Love songs, a million love songs would be mega.
The mini cab is waiting. It's you can actually hear it. 1998 Primera.
But what would be a really vocal diesel? Because you can actually hear it in the background of the recording studio because it's so loud. They're like,
when was that song? That song was in the 90s, wasn't it? So I think they might have still been using... what about a Montego diesel?
Oh, the Perkins.
Because they had a bit of a chunky turnover, didn't they? They were a bit... Yeah, the Perkins Prima.
It's one of those engines which sounded like it had no oil in it. So you had to check the oil every 20 minutes just to satisfy your curiosity.
Well, the other day, I was putting pictures of manufacturers' test tracks on Twitter. Of course I was. I'm a deeply interesting man.
I saw this,
and I put the first one I put up. I found it completely by accident when I was looking for something else. This picture of the what's now the Jaguar Land Rover test track at Gaydon, but when it was sort of quite newly opened by British Leyland in 1980, and there's a picture. You could just see it very small in frame, an Ital estate on the track, and somebody. Various people who follow me on Twitter, obviously are engineers and have worked or do work at that facility, have sort of chimed in with various recollections. And one guy said, when we were developing Perkins engines for Land Rovers, we decided to run one round without any oil in it, and it just kept going, which is remarkable, but I suppose not entirely. I mean, that's the thing with diesel engines, they sort of self-lube a bit, don't they? So I suppose it's okay.
They do.
But
they do.
I still wouldn't recommend it. I'm trying to think what else would make a right old racket and ruin Gary Barlow's vocal take. Maybe a Granada. Those Ford diesels in the 80s were bloody awful, weren't they?
Yeah, there was a guy that used to do quite a lot of enthusiastic drink driving near me, and he had a normally aspirated diesel Sierra.
Was that
2.3?
I think it might have been. Yes, it was, I remember. And so was the Granada of that era.
To be honest with you, I'm not saying it was cool to drink drive because it wasn't. But I think if I was the police, I would just listen for the engine. And as soon as you hear it start up in the pub car park, you know, oh, hang on a minute, Daryl's about to go out on the road after 6 pints of cider. And also, it was so glacially slow. I reckon, so you'd sort of half throttle in third, you could jump out of the driver's door, sort of, you know, George Michael's
George
spec.
Michael,
you'd only be doing about 21 miles an hour. So it's just like, it was so awful. Mm. I mean, what an awful, awful thing.
I just remembered that the lady who lived across the road from my parents in the 90s had a Mark IV Escort diesel, naturally aspirated.
Oh, gosh.
And that made a frigging racket on startup. Good
what
God.
An awful thing. I mean, I'm awful. Surprised that the engine mounts had to be made out of titanium, solid titanium.
Yeah. Oh, yeah, it was directly from the space programme. It was with the same stuff they used to anchor solar panels to a satellite. And going through an asteroid field.
Oh, the only diesel cars had to use inner wings made of, like, acro props because otherwise it would just pull... It would pull the strut towers inwards where it was just trying to turn the whole car over.
You know, like, you eat something really sour and then you suck your cheeks in. That would be sort of where the entire engine bay of that car is...
Oh, yeah, what, like Ian Brown's face?
Ian Brown's always just had one of those lemon sour sweets whenever he's photographed. Yeah, all right, man, no, just let me have that. Oh, man, it's sour. Don't take the photo. Too late. It's a shame he's turned out to be a prick, isn't it? Because
it is a shame. I was just thinking...
Of his music.
I think Stone Roses is amazing, and I worry he's gone a bit odd, a bit too odd. Talking of which, actually, I was last night on this journey of creative driving home.
Yeah.
they were celebrating the 30th anniversary of U2's Achtung Baby.
I know this
isn't a podcast about music, it's about cars, but you know, music's an intrinsic part of doing a lot of journeys, isn't it?
Yeah,
driving journeys. I have to say, it was that they played it all song by song, and I was like, bloody hell, this has got some good shit in it. Mysterious Ways, what a tune.
Yeah,
I was well down with that, and I realised I was too. I never went to any U2, I've never been to a U2 concert, but the Achtung Baby tour was supposed to be quite something, and with flying trabants and things. And
I'm one of those people who's sort of like, if you go, are you a U2 fan? I'd go, no, not really. And then I realised I do have a lot of their music and I do quite like them. And
agree.
Achtung Baby's one of those albums where it's like you say, you forget how good it is and then you put it on and go, oh.
Stunning.
Oh, yeah. And at the time, particularly, do you remember the first time you heard The Fly?
Yeah.
You just go, what the fuck is this? And then it sounded crazy and messy and deranged and not U2, because you used to be standing on top of a cactus with loads of delay on the guitar, doing slightly pompous sort of stadium rock. And then suddenly they're doing this kind of scuzzy, mad stuff. And after a few listens, they went, actually, I think this might be really good. So, yeah, I can't believe it's 30 years since that.
I
have seen U2 in concert. I saw them when they did that thing where they played the whole of the Joshua Tree.
Oh, really?
And that was the first half of the gig, and then the second half was they just did a grab bag of hits and then did a really slightly odd version of Bowie's Heroes with Noel Gallagher, who was the support act, Noel Gallagher's High-Sided Vehicles.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and he came back on to do... Actually, no, he didn't. Sorry, U2 did Heroes on their own, and then he came back on to do an Oasis song, which was the final song they did, and U2 were just Noel Gallagher's backing band. It was a really interesting choice, but good. But they are phenomenally good live. They're like
Noel Gallagher's high-revving VTEC.
Oh, no, yeah, they were pretty good, but Noel Gallagher's high-idling van, which actually you could hear the whole time at the back of Twickenham Stadium, where the gig was, just it was a Sherpa.
It was actually his minicab where to take, as soon as, because he didn't want to do any backstage stuff, he was over.
He just wanted to get out of there, so he's got a guy
waiting idly,
yeah, in a Mark III Cavalier.
I was going to say Montego Countryman.
Estate airport run
with a very very sort of like dry sounding engine.
Is there any oil in there? Well, it's hard to tell, mate. It sounds the same either way.
Yeah,
very dry. But yeah, Noel specifically requests it because it's the estate. He can get his guitars and an amp in the back of it. No worries at all.
Yeah,
and off he goes back to. Hey, have you seen, by the way? Sorry,
Noel Gallagher's dry-sided sumps. I don't know. Oh, just silly Noel Gallagher bands that don't exist. Do you know what? I'm wondering whether listeners of this podcast...
high oil consumption.
Oh, yeah. The boars are scored to hell. The rings are ruined.
Noel Gallagher's got a car for sale on Car and Classic at the moment.
Oh!
And this is quite a well-known car, apparently, in Noel Gallagher circles, because he got... Presumably because he'd been drinking or doing other things of an intoxicating nature, that he decided to buy a car. He saw one of those Vicarage Jags. You know, they do sort of beautiful Mark II Jag restorations, or sort of, I suppose, not really resto mods, they're just beautiful restorations. Yeah. I think they will put modern engines in them, won't they? I forget now.
Oh, they will. They will. And I think they definitely put... they'll definitely put stuff like a more modern injected Jag engine in it. So better ignition and everything. So
apparently Noel Gallagher saw one of these and went, I want one of those. I'm going to buy one. So he ordered one, knowing he couldn't drive at this point, because they said to him, well, it'll take about 18 months to 2 years to make this for you. And he's like, brilliant, I'll have learnt to drive by then. And then he forgot.
He forgot to learn to drive as well.
So really? Yeah, and one day this car turns up at his house on a lorry. So he just stashed it away, and then it just never used it.
So it's never been used?
Never been used. I think his wife took it out once.
Noel Gallagher's never used coach-built Jaguars?
Yes.
What?
Noel Gallagher's low-mileage classics. In fact, a garage as well as an album.
That could be, pop stars have done weirder things. I'm sure if he started shifting old Bristols and Dusty Jensens, you'd go, all right.
Has it ever been used? He'd be the one car dealer who doesn't just drive the stock round until the tank's on fumes.
He'd be the guy, and someone mentioned this actually on social media as a potential topic of chat, he'd be one of these ones where he's selling quite an expensive exotic car, but he simply doesn't have the patience to write a good description in the advert for it. And if you ask any more questions about it, he gets quite short and aggressive with you.
Really,
you'd be like,
tetchy.
It's an 80 grand car. I'm asking about things like, you know, was the interior ever restored? Well, I don't know whether it was. Just come and... And if you come and see it, I've only got 10 minutes, so don't mess me about. I don't want any... It's like, do you want to sell this bloody car or not? I mean, seriously, don't be short with me.
You email them from the ad and go, just wondering, have you got any pictures of the interior? Because there are literally none in the advert, and they send back, we're really busy.
Yeah.
And that's it.
Well, that's great. Wonderful. Thanks for that.
It could be extensively fire damaged inside, and you'd never know because of their bizarre policy of really shitty adverts for cars. It's strange, that, isn't it? And it's like when you see a dealer do it, it's really mystifying because, like, a private punter, that's one thing, but I don't understand why a dealer would. This is your job. This is totally your job to do. It's one of the few things you have to do.
Why can't you do it correctly?
Anyway, Noel Gallagher. So the thing that Noel Gallagher ordered from Vicarage wasn't just a lovely restored Mark II Jag. It was a Mark II Jag that's been made into a two-door convertible. And quite honestly, I taste is personal, of course, but I think it looks bloody awful. It looks like a Mitsuoka.
Yeah, I'm with you on that. I think when you describe it, it sounds like it could be a wonderful thing, but the execution hasn't quite worked. I'm sure it's been done really well, quality.
Oh God, yeah! It looks like the finish is beautiful.
I bet it finishes amazing.
Cars are exquisitely done.
It probably cost him $250,000. I mean,
well, I think it's up for 125 grand from memory, assuming it's still for sale. I bet that's
less than it cost him to build the bloody
thing. Oh God, yeah. Yeah, no, it's absolute classic example of rock star excess in that he's bought a car that he can't use and then just gone, oh, fuck it, and put it in a garage and not use it.
At least you know what car it started off as. It was the Will.i.am who commissioned some absolute, like, heroin injection spec cars. I mean, they're just so odd and just stupid. You know what I mean? It's like you've got Frank Zappa on a configurator and gone, go on, Frank, have a go on that. What do you reckon? And he just build his own configurator. I just found
this ad for Noel Gallagher's Jag, and 125 grand. Apparently, it was in one of his music videos recently.
Yeah, but he didn't
As featured
it,
in
he?
Noel Gallagher's High Flying Birds recent music video featuring Matt Smith and Gala Gordon. This is a bit of a half, because what's happened is that it says built by Vicarage for Noel Gallagher, on whose behalf we are offering it for sale. It's a garage in Surrey that's actually selling it, and it's a half-arsed ad. The pictures aren't bad. There's a few pictures, but the description is all of six lines, and it ends with a Google search will provide all sorts of additional information. Well, why don't you do that? That's your job. It's extraordinarily sloppy. I mean, on the other hand, I can't bear those adverts that you see a lot, classic car ads, where they go through basically, and then the animals crawled from the sea and evolved legs and lungs. And you've gone too far back. It's just ridiculous. And then Mr. William Hurst of the Rover Car Company, then you just go, no, just cut to the chase. I don't need to know the history of the car. I either know it already or I will look it up separately.
Yes.
I want to know about this specific car that you're selling. Don't need to go into the history of humankind.
So true. You're so right. I don't want the history of that car, of the make and model from square one. I want to know what happened to this one. What's this car's story?
Yeah, yeah.
Damn it.
There's a happy medium with car ads. But only about the specific thing you're selling, not how the wheel was discovered or how internal combustion came about. Not necessary. Cut to the chase.
I've just realised, and I apologise in advance, if A, you can hear the tumble dryer, because my wife appears to have filled it with spanners and spare part bits of metal that she's found in the garden.
Just going to dry out these snooker balls, Johnny.
Actually, to add to that, our tumble dryer is completely wanked. I've tried to mend it and it's wanked. It's a real shame. So I think it's a bit built-in obsolescence there. And then B, I'm in the same room I always record this podcast in, and it's very echoey because I've been forced to tidy it.
Oh no!
Yeah, and it's really tidy. It's actually helped my kind of my focus and my productivity. But yeah. I think it's gone really echoey as a result.
It does sound more echoey than normal. Yeah.
So I'm wondering it's the lack of clutter.
Could you get a few cushions or pillows next week?
Yeah. Do you know my pet hate with sofas, as I've said to you before, is lots of scatter cushions that you have to just fuzz immediately on the floor because they don't help the seating experience. But I might buy loads. I'm going to order loads today. I'm going to go to Homebase, and you know the really unpopular ones that nobody orders because they're crap designs. I'm going to buy them.
Because it's got a picture of Hermann Göring on it. It's reduced to £2. I'll buy that.
Or Car Club. You know Car Clubs who will sell you a cushion, and you go, oh, that's amazing. Oh, wow, the Focus RS Owners Club have got a scatter cushion available. Yeah.
Can't believe they make Mark IV Passat cushions. That's amazing. Well, I'll have one too, please. Or just egg boxes. Just pin some egg boxes to the wall. That might do the trick.
I'm going
to
do egg boxes.
It's a strong look.
And I'm Owners Club apparel. Yeah, I'm going to do that. Absolutely, 100%.
Or Owners Club egg boxes, if such a thing exists. I'm sure they do. What we print on demand these days, you probably go, oh, wow, I didn't know this. But the...
If, listen, you can hold me to ransom if the MG Owners Club of Great Britain don't sell
eggs.
an egg cup.
We're back to General Electric and their diffuse business model. You go, yeah, we're the MG Owners Club, but, you know, aren't they the biggest car owners club in Britain or even the world or something? I mean, they're a proper company, aren't they? They have a headquarters.
Yeah, they're a real company. Yeah,
I mean, I know a lot of owners clubs have a headquarters, but it turns out to be someone's dining room table. But the MG Owners Club has an actual building in Abingdon, think, or in Oxfordshire.
If you order spares from an owners club like of the size of the MG, I think it's a proper warehouse, whereas most of the time it's sort of someone's dead mother's garage that they go round to every other week.
Yeah,
and they'll go, I'm sure we've got one of those wishbones, but I've just got to go and check. But I'm not there until sort of like a fortnight's time, and even then, there's no electricity in there, so I'm just going to have to go and use my phone as a torch. So I'll see what I can do. And if I've been in that situation, I'm like, oh, I kind of need it quite urgently. Could I give you a bit of extra money to kind of get it within a week or so? No. Oh, okay.
I can't.
Oh,
because,
shit.
Yeah.
And they're like, I don't. I've also had the instance where I'll find it for you, but I'm not posting it to you. Okay.
Better than the other way around, I suppose. Well, I'll post it to you, but I'm not going to find it first, okay?
Or I'm not going to give you a price first, so I'll post it to you, and then you'll go, that's the part, and you go, brilliant, it's £695. You go, well, hang on, it's just a door hinge. I know, but it's the one that you want, and it's £700.
Also, I didn't ask you to put some eggs in the same package. They've all smashed and ruined everything. Well, we sell eggs now, so I'm afraid you're going to have to deal with it.
Do you know what? I'm not down on owners clubs. There's some brilliant ones out there.
No, there are some brilliant ones, aren't there?
I'm a member of two of them.
Are you?
I'm a member of two owners clubs. Avenger Sunbeam Owners Club.
Okay, so you're a member of a club for a car you do not have.
Yes, that's true, Richard, yeah. Uh-huh.
I might just do that because I'm not a member of any owners clubs. I might just go and join one of a car that I like but don't actually have.
You should do that as a Christmas present to yourself. You know when you can like adopt an animal to help it from becoming extinct.
Yeah, but you don't get the animal, do you?
If you don't get the animal,
you can't have it at home.
You can't.
Stupid.
No, I had to explain that to my daughter because she adopted a snow leopard. And it's like when the zebra
is not coming round for Christmas. Just to make that clear.
That's right. It's like you're not going to get a snow leopard because that's the point of this sponsorship. Is there's not many of them. And so, do you know what? Could we adopt a Maturancho? Because I think there's only about four in Britain.
Yes. I was just going to say, what I might do instead of joining an owner's club for a car I don't have, I'm going to start an owner's club for a car I don't have, and you can only join it if you also do not have this car, like the Talbot Tagora Owner's Club or something.
The
bloke who owns Britain's last Tagora, which I assume is close to being the case, will fetch up and we'll go, no, I'm sorry. You can't come in unless you sell your Tagora. We're very much a virtual owners club. Or what a about, theoretical one.
I know you like bitters, don't you? They're a car that you never see.
Oh, yeah.
And no, and not a probably, there's probably three of them in Britain. So what about a bitter owner's club? A bit. Sounds great anyway.
Open to misinterpretation as well.
Completely. Because you'd have a guy turn up. I'm really glad this club's kicked off because I was
fucking hate my ex-wife. No, it's not that kind of bitter.
I was a member of the V6 Vectra Club, and they're all tossers. So I've quit that club. I want to join another club.
But I like GM Europe sourced parts. So I'm coming to the bitter club. There is, I've just typed in bitter owners club into Google, and welcome to the bitter owners club website. My goodness. There is where is it based?
Is it in Britain? It's not in Britain.
It feels
is it?
Like it is. There's pictures of bitters on display at the Classic Car Show at the NEC. Oh, actually, it's the Classic Car Show in Manchester.
Gosh.
The club, let's have a look. Yeah. The Bitter Owners Club was initially founded in 1988 to represent the interests of owners and enthusiasts of the 33 cars in the UK.
It
soon expanded. Yeah. This is 1988, though, when they were still making them, I think. Expanded to meet the needs of bitter enthusiasts worldwide. Currently, the club has over 50 members in 5 countries. That's brilliant.
Over
50. That's 52, I'm going to say. Best Bitter, the club magazine. Oh, well done.
This is just so good.
Is at the heart of the club. It is published quarterly and normally has between 32 and 40 pages. Wow. It covers such as introducing new members. Yes! I'm going to join them. When they go, what bitter have you got? I go, I haven't. But I'm thinking about it.
There's so many Partridge-esque moments. Are you sure that Steve Coogan doesn't do the Bitter magazine? It started just because you know what he's like. He's quite an unusual guy anyway, isn't it? It's the sort of thing he would probably enjoy.
Yeah, he probably would. And he likes cars. There's no joining fee, by the way. I've just looked at the joining page. There's no joining fee. The annual subscription rates are UK £10. That is a bargain.
Should we join? That should be our thing. Neither of us own bitters, last time I checked.
We just wanted to join. But so general membership inquiries. You see, this is classic. This is the guy, I guess, is the head of the club. It's just his address. He lives on the Isle of Wight.
Oh, of course. Can you imagine driving a bitter on the Isle of Wight? I mean, you're instantly a man of mystery, aren't you? It's just wonderful. What does this man do?
The only personnel of the Bitter Club listed on the website is just this one guy. He's the secretary, Paul, on the Isle of Wight. I feel like he may be carving a lonely furrow at the moment. He's got no... Maybe that's it. We'll join and offer to be like club president. They probably... You're on the telly. You could be their club president.
Shall
I'd
I?
Love that. Actual what? Celebrity joins the Bitter Club and they'll just gloss over the fact you don't have a bitter.
And, do you reckon?
I think so. I'm going to look up, though. Well, so I'm on Car and Classic anyway. Shall I just see if they've got any bitters for sale?
Don't, because you'll find
why
out this
stuff. Bitters
several.
Funny? Oh, God,
I don't
there
know
are.
Why bitters are funny. By the way, if you're a Patreon to this podcast, we will put some links, bitter links
and all sorts, and Noel Gallagher's car and all that. There's a bitter here, £28,950 for a 1984 Bitter SC with a very sort of caramelly ruched leather interior.
Oh, ruched.
It's a
nice
looking
ruched,
car,
wouldn't it?
It's like a sort of B-side Ferrari 400.
Yeah, I think it probably would drive better than that.
No, I bet it would, yeah. Oh, my God, this interior is leathery.
Is
it? Dear, yeah. It's really leathery. I bet there's potential for a lot of squeakiness in there, but this car looks tidy AF.
So the person that owns that, their wife probably had a Di Tommaso Deauville as their sort of other car, more practical car.
Ooh. So, yeah, this is a particularly fine example with good paintwork, very good paintwork, actually, it says, and an excellent, luxurious interior. Originally a Canadian car, it was brought over to Europe and registered in Germany, currently in the UK, but we can assist with new registration anywhere. Probably the best value Bitter SC in the world right now. It's a hotly contested category.
I was going to say, I'm not going to argue with that. No. Noel Gallagher will probably buy it and say, can you convert it to an 8-door limousine running
and then,
on?
Yeah, well, that'll take a couple of years. Brilliant. I'll have totally forgotten about it by then.
That's just Noel Gallagher's forgetful car commissions. It'll just be like...
Noel Gallagher's short-term memory.
I've just commissioned the 8-door bitter that solely runs on cat piss. I think it's going to be ready by 2030. It's going to be amazing.
I was going to say we should start to wind this one up so that we can have it delivered to Noel Gallagher's house and claim that he forgot he ordered it. But I was just going to say, back to that Cayman GT4 that you've been driving.
Yeah.
I had totally forgotten about that car in a weird sort of way. Like, I'd just been like, ah, GT4, yeah, I hear it's really good. I'm sure it's great, la, 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 but it's not a GT3, is it?
The sort of corona got in the way, probably muddied the fanfare of it.
And you were messaging me the other afternoon when you were driving it, raving about how sublime it was. I think you used the word sublime, didn't you?
Yeah, and I don't use that word very often.
No.
Because I often think if you separate the two words, sub and lime, it's a sort of DJ name that I would adopt if I was in a different job.
Wasn't it a Chrysler colour, a Mopar colour?
Oh, it was sublime. Sublime was. It was along with Plum Crazy and Panther Pink. Oh, there were some awesome colours. Mega colours.
So I started looking at it, and I read a couple of reviews of the GT4 that I sort of probably scanned over at the time. And I suddenly got a total want on for that car, because I realised, in fact, it's brilliant. I mean, I've not driven it, but it sounds amazing. And what you said about it, I was just like, and what the point you were making, which I'm sure you'll make in your video, so I won't spoil it, about, you know, how it is the Porsche that people think doesn't exist anymore. But it's fabulous. So I started looking. I was like, yes. And not even the RS that they announced the other day. It's like, oh, yes, I'm sure that's fine, but that standard GT4 sounds fabulous. But then I was looking, I was going, I spec'd one up on the Porsche configurator, and even with a few little bits and pieces just to make it really nice.
Ashtray door handle protectors and an earthing strip on the back. It's still under 80
strip,
grand.
Chrome wheel arches and like an old Merc. And it still comes in at 70-ish grand, less than the very cheapest no options 911. And that sort of feels like a bargain in a weird world where 70 grand is a bargain. But then I realised they also put that engine, slightly less power, in the Cayman GTS.
That's right.
So I started reading reviews of that.
Yeah.
And my colleague Stu Gallagher from Evo had reviewed it and basically said, really, it's fabulous in every way. And I started specking one of those. And that was like 60 grand?
Yeah. So although it's 60K, it's a lot of money, especially in, you know.
But in Porsche terms, it's not.
And if it's a GT car, that's the thing, it's a Porsche GT car. It's pretty special, right? And I mean, you'll have to watch my Late Break Show review of the car and decide whether I've done a terrible job of reviewing it. But there's not going to be any street drifting because I'm too old for that, and I'll get caught. But nevertheless, a hell of a car.
I like the way you preemptively warned me that the video might not be brilliant because you were really tired when you did it. But I'm sure it will be worth a watch. Well, on that note, we should wrap things up. And as we do, I've got three things to tell you. The first one is that, as you probably know, Johnny has a solo YouTube channel called The Late Break Show. And upon there, you will shortly find a review of the Porsche 718 Cayman GT4. When's that going up, roughly?
I think it's actually going to be going up the day this podcast comes out. So it's something you can do on the same day.
Keep them peeled, guys. The second thing I've got to do is I've got a new book out. It's called Boring Car Trivia 3. It's available on Amazon as a paperback or an ebook, or you can buy the paperback through the Late Break Show merch shop as well. It is full of lots of arcane facts about cars. That's what it says on the tin. And the third thing I've got to tell you is that, once again, I haven't checked my notes and I can't remember what I was going to tell you. Oh, yes, the world's biggest crisp factory is on the outskirts of Leicester.
Oh, yeah, it's Ashby de la Zouche.
Is it Ashby? Okay.
I think it's Ashby de la Zouche.
I thought it was sort of more just like suburban Leicester, but it makes some... Well, it normally makes about 11 million bags of crisps a day.
Does it really? 11 million?
Who's eating all these crisps?
Gosh,
it doesn't at the moment, though, because they're having an IT problem and there's a national crisp drought from Walkers.
There is. And I wish there was a single-use plastic drought, but sadly there isn't. But that's another subject.
Well, quite.
On that side of things. So thanks for listening.
11 million bags of crisps a day, though.
That's filth. That's filth. But great if you've got a hangover.
Just hungry.
Yeah, well, look, thanks for listening to the podcast. If you haven't already commented, left us a star rating, apparently that makes it a good thing. So you can do that.
Yes, let's get business-like about this. Right, like us, through, I don't know, Apple Podcasts or Spotify or something, just like us, give us a star rating, leave a review, that's even better. And if you want to really show your support, we have a Patreon, and we really appreciate the fact that people do throw in a few quid to help us justify continuing to do this.
Yeah, that would be wonderful. Thanks ever so much.
These are what marketing people would call calls to action, I think.
Yeah, CTAs. Yeah,
or calls activations to as well. Are you, activations is a sort of term in that world. And I went to a rugby match the other day where they did a half-time thing to promote something, which, tellingly, I can't remember what they were promoting. But at the end of it, the guy doing the commentary went, OK, that's the end of that activation. I was like, you're sort of showing how the sauce is made here, mate. But I thought that was quite weird.
Activation.
Anyway. Activations. Well, there are activations or calls to action, whatever you want to call them.
Yeah.
Please subscribe to our Patreon. You get bonus content. Every so often, you'll get a Friday afternoon pub quiz from me, which should be about cars, obviously.
Although, that's right.
This podcast often isn't.
And thank you for your letters. Electric letters, not physical ones.
Electric letters, no, we don't. Maybe we should start doing that where we'll just give out one of our home addresses and we'll start running Smith & Sniff Industries Limited from a dining room table, just like
sounds like the story of my life. Yeah, we'll do that.
Well, yeah. You do sort of do that, don't you?
I do that, so don't mock me.
I suppose I do, in a way. All right. Anyway, that's enough of this for now.
I love
now,
you. But, and I promise the next podcast I'll talk about my office chair that someone turned into a gigantic phallus when I worked on Max Power.
Oh. Until then, thank you very much for listening. Goodbye.
Bye.